We started this podcast because we had a shared interest in how technology influences journalism and vice versa, but also because we wanted to continue our education in the field. The attraction of interactive journalism and new media is that it's a new frontier in an old trade, but taking the tried and true tenets of journalism and applying them online is not that simple. That's where education comes in. Our guest is one of the leaders in the online education field, who is constantly reassessing what's relevant, what works, and what skills are necessary to journalists in this medium that is constantly reinventing itself. Amy Eisman is currently the director of the Media Entrepreneurship and Interactive Journalism Programs at American University's School of Communication. Prior to coming to American, she was an editor at Gannett for 17 years, first as a cover story editor at USA Today, then as an executive editor at USA Weekend. She was also managing editor at AOL and a Fulbright lecturer in Moscow. She's written training modules on breaking news online and database journalism, and she co-chaired the 2010 Online News Association conference. Amy, as a journalist, educator, and advocate for online media, you've seen the disruption of the industry caused by the arrival of the internet. What are your thoughts on what has happened in journalism in the last 10 to 15 years?
Well, first I want to throw in how I'm sitting here cavelling. A good Yiddish word, about being with two of my star pupils. This is an honor for me to be here, and particularly to be here on your first podcast. Talk about a little bit about where journalism has been and a little bit about where it's going. I tend to look forward rather than back, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time lamenting what was or actually teaching people about what was, except in a historical sense. I think we are in a tremendous transition period. The words I would use are exciting, scary, the rules are forming as we go. We're pretty much following the pattern of what happens with disruptive media. First, there are the early adapters, and then people try to impose guidelines and regulations, and we are in a little bit of a free-for-all right now. I don't think anyone has any of the answers, as Michael, you said so clearly in the beginning, but I think it is a tremendous playing field, and it is a wonderful and exciting time to try new things.
I heard this thing on another podcast where it was a comedian who was sort of discussing journalism just in an offhand way and termed it as the death of journalism. Journalism is not dying. Journalism is changing. And the sooner people realize that, sort of accept that and say, okay, how can we change this? What can we change it for the better? I mean, like I said before, there are opportunities. And, you know, that's kind of where what this is all about. So where is journalism at the moment? I think you kind of touched on that we're in sort of a transition.
I think the key word for where journalism is right now is transition. I throw in excitement and experimentation because I think that the organizations that are moving the quickest are trying things, and they're not all flipped out about sending it all the way up the ladder to start something big. They have pilot programs and starting small and trying things out. I do think the biggest challenge is for legacy media companies, because turning those ships is like turning a huge, huge boat. That's taking people already in place, already doing traditional things, whether it's in legacy media, in radio, or in newspapers, or in television, and trying to change that ship into a new direction is tough. I think the ones that are having a little bit more ease are the ones that are starting flat and creating as they go along. And that might be something like a Huffington Post or any of the other news, social media news sites that have come up. As we know, sitting here today in the middle of 2012, that even social media is going through changes. Just in the last few days, everybody's watching what's been happening with Facebook and Groupon and what's happening in terms with their stock and where that's going. I don't think everybody should be lemmings following one thing entirely. I think journalists mm-hmm. that we're looking at now should try different things. Twitter right now is huge. Twitter played a huge role at NPR through Andy Carvin in following the Arab Spring. Twitter has been a tremendous way of people, journalists, communicating with each other, fact-checking. One of the things I love about Twitter and social media, for example, is you can watch a vice presidential or presidential debate on television, and then you can watch your Twitter feed, and somebody within seconds will combat what somebody's saying or have documents posted to say if that's accurate or not. So Twitter is one of the things right now. But there's all kinds of things people are trying. Storify, Tumblr, Storyful. And the big movement right now is actually towards mobile.
For me, my big aha moment for Twitter was the Japanese earthquake. I first saw the news on TV and just happened to, my phone was next to me. I picked it up and I went to see what was going on Twitter. And I saw tons of alerts coming from CNN, from ABC, from all the news outlets. And then I saw things from people who were, had friends in Japan or who were in, who were actually in Japan and posting things. And I saw sort of the news unfolding in a very different way than I had been used to before. And I know people have kind of, you know, up to this point have been sort of very dismissive of Twitter and social media in general and saying, oh, well, we're not going to cover the news with Twitter. Twitter is just a tool. It's not going to be the end result. We're not going to be all sending out our news stories on Twitter. I think it certainly has its role as a promotional device.
Let me tell you a story, not to show my age, but I was really at USA Today at launch in 1982, and everybody said, oh, wow, McPaper, the news is so short. Isn't anybody going to get any information? The stories are too brief. As you know, working in the media that you work in, you know that it's really hard to write short. You have to kind of report long to write short. But what we used to say at USA Today was, we're getting more information to more people who never used to have it before. So you can get a short burst of information as somebody who might not have paid any attention to what was happening in Jakarta or Indonesia or anywhere in the world. And I feel that for the people who put down disruptive media and disruptive technologies, I don't think they're actually really interacting with them. I think they're looking at them from afar. A lot of people, you hear them say, oh, blogs aren't news. Well, blogs are really just a software program to, you know, just a platform.
It's a delivery system.
And it's really, as you say, what you're doing with it. Now, I will say that what's come out of this, and this to me, again, is what is exciting about journalism right now, is guidelines and rules are following after the disruptive technology. Just a month ago, Associated Press came out with its revised social media guidelines. This is something a lot of news organizations are grappling with right now. How do we let people have, how do we let our own journalists handle their Facebook accounts? How do our journalists handle their Twitter feeds? How do our journalists handle any of their social media accounts? And when are they working for us and when are they not? And when do they have political voices and when do they not? And when do they do all their reporting through Facebook platforms and when do they not? To me, wow, what a great time to be a journalist.
I know, there's so many incredible dialogues. Just the social media thing is just fascinating to see this sort of unravel. About a month or a couple of weeks ago, I made the mistake of sort of floating a question on a Facebook group that about social media and sort of half criticized the New York Times. It wasn't really a full criticism. That they didn't really have an established social media guidelines. And I was kind of like, well, you know, it'd be kind of nice if you guys had something, because there are a lot of people that look to you as a legacy journalist as, you know, maybe the finest paper that's still out there, you know, and leading the ways in many ways, put something down on paper. And I got a lot of feedback from people on that Facebook page. These are all social media people. And they were, you know, well, you know, we don't really have a, you know, our outlet doesn't have a real guidelines. We kind of, you know, sort of go on best practices.
Let's talk about the mistakes a little bit.
Okay.
Because the mistakes are actually where we're learning. And there have been some terrible mistakes on Twitter. When Gabby Giffords was shot in Arizona, some of the early reports said that she was dead. And that was not true.
Right.
When Joe Paterno, who did die, was dying, early reports said he was dead, and that was not true. What happens is that the rush to be first sometimes gets in the way of the rush to be accurate. And I do think news organizations stopped and looked at themselves more seriously to figure out how can they stop this rush to be wrong. Once you're wrong, people fly away from you. Mm-hmm. They just fly away from your brand. And once you're right, they're going to stick with you. And people are not as loyal to brands, obviously, as they used to be. They're really just looking for the information.
And you really define your brand by how you deal with a mistake. You know, when do you correct it? How quickly do you it? And you know, how transparent you are. You don't just go in and just erase something and as if the mistake never occurred. You acknowledge, okay, maybe we acted too quickly. There's a sort of desire in journalism to be first. I mean, that's part of what we do is to get the news out quickly, but sometimes being first really shouldn't be your first consideration.
It also changes the paradigm and not always necessarily in the right way. You take a gossips like TMZ, and TMZ was right about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
And so then people started to give TMZ that much more credibility until actually the next time when they or anybody else will be wrong. The listening and viewing and reading public is fairly fickle. They'll follow information like, you know, a dog after red meat. But as soon as it's wrong, the credibility, to gain back that credibility, is a very, very steep climb.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're an educator at this point in your career. You know, what's your role at this point in the environment that we're looking at?
I see my role as an educator as a guide. The whole, we talk about this. Educators, just like journalists love to talk about journalism, educators love to talk about education. We have sites. There's an online educator site. It has a Facebook site. It's got 335 members. We're yakking on there all the time. How are we going to teach mobile? Which, you know, cameras are you going to use? What happens when you do this? Who has tutorials for that? And it is a wonderful, wonderful, lively discussion. I see us as educators as the guides to have the students learn through experiential education. If we're sitting there sage on the stage telling you what we think, that's not going to work. If you're out there making your mistakes, learning how to do it, doing it on deadline, that's much, much more effective way for you to absorb what we have in front of us. Now, one of the things that I have been very involved with has to do with online education, and that could, we could, you know, do another hour just about that and the strengths and the weaknesses of online education. The big idea that I'd like to share with you here is that higher education is going through the same exact paradigm shift that media went through. And for those in higher education who act like the old-time publishers who said, I know what my customers want, I know when I'll give them the content that they want, I know how they want it distributed to them, are not going to make it. The ones that are looking at the customers and saying they're demanding information this way, they're demanding it in this format, they're still demanding what I call them knowledge customers.
Mm-hmm.
They're still demanding information. They just want it distributed differently on their time.
Right.
It doesn't mean everything's going to go online. Some of the most successful experiments are happening with hybrid education, where there's some what we call face-to-face mm-hmm. and some online education. My point is that an early mainstream legacy media did not move quickly enough in accepting the shift
right.
in terms of what the consumers wanted. And education, higher education, is now beginning to catch up. You look at something called Coursera. I don't know if you're familiar with called Coursera. A consortium of universities are giving away educational content for free. Now, my sister is taking a Coursera course for free from a professor at the University of Michigan. She lives in Philadelphia. She has thousands of people in her class. It's got to do with science fiction. She loves it. Now, is she going to write the papers at 65 years old? She's probably not going to write the papers. She doesn't want to have peer review.
Mm-hmm.
What's so smart about Coursera is that they are gathering metrics and analytics on what people will do online mm-hmm. and what, you know, how long will they stick with it and will they ever pay for it and will they want a certificate or will they want a graduate degree? That's smart. Mm-hmm. That is smart of the universities to try that kind of paradigm and try that kind of shift, because it shows that they're not going to make the same mistakes that publishers made. Or
music industry or movies. Or I mean, that conversation, we're talking about not just necessarily our industry, but everything has shifted with the internet. One of the things I really liked about the interactive journalism program at AU was that you updated it each year. You based it on input from the previous class, and then you sort of adjusted your you know, who your professors were, what types of class you're going to offer, maybe even the order in which you offered the classes. Can you sort of talk about how you did that process?
Unlike some people in universities, I actually do think of the students as customers. And I think that I am in a service and education industry, as I said, for knowledge customers. And I think that it's important for us to ask, what did you want? What could be better? What could we do to help you with your careers? So some of the changes that I'm making from the program that you guys were in and you graduated in May 2012 to the people who will be graduating in May 2014, it's a 20-month program every Saturday, as you well know.
Yeah, 8 hours a day.
8 hours plus, a day.
Plus after work, doing assignments and, you know, on Sundays, trying to read and do all the other stuff.
Right. So some of the adjustments is not less school. I'm sorry, Michael. We're going to still have just as much school. But we are changing some of the courses. For example, we're adding a data journalism course. Now, everybody knows that, you know, half of, you know, the content that we're looking at now is how to navigate data, how to manipulate data, and how to use data to tell new stories. Data is being used very dramatically in the presidential election coverage. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably a key course and probably something I heard from your cohort. What can we add or what should we do that can help you in the future? I'll probably in the farther future look at something having to do with mobile, because all content, I was just looking at a Pew report, and one of the phrases they use is news in your pocket, which I think is a wonderful expression, news in your pocket. Right now, you know, the using laptops is really kind of old-fashioned.
Old school.
Old school.
It's the Conestoga wagon of news delivery that you it's nice and mobile, but it's a little too big. We need to...
It's a little bit too big. So people are turning to tablets, but, you know, people are really looking at their iPhones and their smartphones to give them information. I mean, in the future, who knows? They're looking at, you know, contact lenses that can take, you know, text.
Let me interrupt you there. I remember when one of the realizations I came to when I was in the AU program, as I was at my print job, you know, the Connection newspapers are kind of our focus was, you know, our audience really was the soccer mom, somebody who had kids who were in school, who were, you know, who was concerned about schools, who was concerned about the traffic, who was concerned about, you know, the local retail, the local businesses, things like that, local government, very locally focused. And it occurred to me that, you know, yeah, our audience didn't really shift, but the way they were digesting the news was shifting. That these soccer moms were getting their news on their iPhones. And as soon as I realized that, then it was like a sort of an eye-opening experience. Okay, well, we have to move to mobile. We have to, you know, write shorter, you know, sort of what you were saying before that USA did.
I would add to that writing is still the number one skill in terms of communication and communicating message. I'm repeating what you guys are saying. I have taken an hour to read a 250-word paragraph that is written poorly, and I've taken a minute to read a 1,000-word story that's written well. It is so key, and even though all of them, we can talk a little bit about what employers are looking for, in the end, one of the top qualities, they still want people who can communicate clearly, crisply, and accurately, and so that is something that we still need to continue to teach.
A recent survey of journalists by the Knight Foundation reported that the top reason journalists said that they were dissatisfied was a lack of training available at work. This surpassed both job security and salary as their concerns. 85% of the respondents said that training that they wanted was in digital and multimedia skills. So, I mean, that's certainly right up your alley as to what's going on with the interactive journalism program. What advice would you give to an established journalist looking to pick up skills like that?
Plug in. It's not difficult to find that information anywhere. So you can do it online. You can take courses. We have not to talk just about American University, but we have one of my colleagues has a certificate program just to teach digital skills online. You can get training in the classroom, as you guys did in the American University Interactive Journalism Program. Or you can do self-teaching. There's something called like Code Academy that can teach you how to do your own coding, and you can do it at your own time. It is not the least bit difficult to find opportunities to teach yourself. I would urge a lot of people to go back to their alma maters and see what they're offering for alums at their own universities in terms of continuing education. I like the idea for people who are a newcomer, and I know that we were maybe going to talk a little bit about newcomers. I don't mean it in a self-serving way, but I think newcomers probably should really look at an academic/training program with some physical face-to-face training, because I think some of the values and the elements of journalism you still need to experience and learn from a professional. Mm-hmm. That line is a little bit hard. The ethics, There are a lot of people who come in with skill sets. They're terrific at the back end skills. They're terrific at HTML. They're terrific at building interactives. They're terrific at all kinds of things. But they actually don't know you can't take that photo from Yahoo and put it on your mm-hmm. blog. They don't know that you can't take that soundbite from somebody else's
sure.
radio station and put that on your blog. So I think that kind of training, law, ethics, values, writing, you still need that piece to get from somebody in the classroom.
It's funny. When I was the print editor at the Connection, while I was in the AU program, I remember this experience I had where I was sort of real full of digital journalism, and you know, we'd done something on our website, and I was really kind of proud of it, that we did it really quickly and really comprehensively, and I was really excited about it. And we, you know, it was the summer, and we had interns coming in. I had a couple of interns who came in. They were high school students. My college interns had just left, and I just got some high school interns in. And I went in to meet with them for the first time, and I looked both of them in the eye, and I said, you know, I'm really excited for you guys because you're in an exciting time for journalism. Everything's changing. And they both looked back at me in horror that they were like, what do you mean it's all changing? And I had sort of stepped back and realized that, you know, certainly for us who are in it, you know, we're excited about it and enthusiastic about it. You know, we also have to look at the fact that for the next generation of journalists, part of our responsibility is we kind of need to sort of lay the groundwork and sort of pass on what we're learning. Okay. Well, we're talking about young journalists. You know, what is it that people are coming in undergrad? What is it they're looking for? Are they still enthusiastic about becoming journalists?
Students today are really enthusiastic about becoming journalists. I think where we do them a disservice is we teach them the way it was rather than the mm-hmm. way it will be. And so I suspect that those two young people that came to you in the newsroom and said, what do you mean it's changing, might have been taught some traditional ways of distributing content and gathering mm-hmm. content that they were worried wasn't going to be there. Now, look, I'm not going to pretend that it's not fun to write, you know, a traditional 15-minute piece, or it's not fun to write a 800, 900-word story with your name on the top. That mm-hmm. still kind of gives people a thrill. But I think that the people that are not learning the new skills are the ones that are disappointed when they see what's coming up. One of the other things that we as faculty members could do as a disservice to students is to say, it's changing. Mm-hmm. Because it's not changing to them. This is their starting point.
It's all new. It's all new. So it's not like that they have to unlearn something necessarily.
It's not even new. It's the world that they're coming from. And they're going to bring that world to the workplace. They grew up on Facebook. I was astonished the other day that some of my students and my graduate students said, we were the first group to grow up on Facebook before our parents had parental control. And so now that's gone.
Right.
Now the parents are in watching, and so they were kind of like little rebels. And I think that they are going to bring all those sensibilities to the workplace. They're going to bring it to journalists. There's been some spectacular journalism done. You look at the coverage of the Virginia Tech shootings. A lot of that, The Washington Post and their Pulitzer Prize winning, they did a lot of reporting on Facebook to try to find people. As you said, each time there's a new disaster,
well,
whether
it's news anyway,
it's a tsunami or whether it's a shooting, the next thing comes along that we see the next disruptive technology, how it's contributing to that.
Again, going back to our experience at AU, one of the things I liked about it was that even though, you know, our class had been, our program had been sort of rewritten for us based on the previous input, as we were taking it, the class was developing because, you know, the industry was changing, but the things we brought to it were changing. Our sort of interests and our demands were changing. So it was, you know, education is a constantly sort of evolving thing, as is journalism.
Let me talk a little bit about what you talked about, the values and knowing the news story in the backyard. I followed the Sandusky case like I've mm-hmm. followed. I was obsessed by it. I'm mm-hmm. horrified by it, obsessed by it, fascinated by the news coverage of it.
Yeah.
And in the end, I found myself continuing to go back to the college newspaper site to read the stories on the ground because that was the site that owned it and really knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
People go for credibility. They go for accuracy. They go for where the information is. and they'll want to get it as quickly as possible. In terms of what kind of skill sets young people need today in terms of going into new jobs, the new jobs are different than the jobs from 20 years ago and from the jobs 15 years ago and probably from the jobs last year. The new jobs have a lot more aggregation and curation, where people are taking content from a lot of places and putting it into a story format of some sort. The new jobs have need a lot of headline writing and much more in terms of search engine optimization. The new jobs need a lot more in terms of multimedia skill sets. And I think that what we're looking for, the employers are looking for, are people with knowledge of everything and a deep skill set in something. Mm-hmm. What they really need right now are people having to do with coding, programming, interactives, data journalism. They're looking for a lot more of what I would call the geekier end of things.
Well, and that's sort of another interesting angle to it is that, you know, as the editors become more knowledgeable about what their needs are, what their audience has, what they're going to look for in a reporter, a new hire is going to be very different. We're going to sort of wrap up here soon, but I did want to talk to you about this new program that's going on at AU, the Media Entrepreneurship Program. Describe that. What's that about?
Michael, thanks for asking me about that, because I've been working on it for 2 years, and we're just, and it's, you know, my summer vacation has been spent putting together a new program called the Master's Program in Media Entrepreneurship. As of yesterday, I have 9 or 10 students in the class, complete superstars. These are people who are mid-career executives who want to come back and figure out how to be entrepreneurs, who are people within their own company trying to start new products or apps or ideas, or entrepreneurs who are people who are in the startup business who might want to start a new Groupon or a Living Social or something in terms of a new product.
The next big thing.
The next big thing. The courses that we're teaching are seminars in media entrepreneurship. We're teaching communication law in terms of setting up your own business. We're teaching media technology management, how to speak the language, how to hire the vendors, how to talk to them. Leading people and organizations. We're teaching marketing management, financial analysis. And at the end, the students who are in this program, again, it's every other Saturday, but one night a week in addition for 20 months. At the end, they have a capstone project where they're supposed to present to, we hope, a board of potential, perhaps not real, venture capitalists, and they're going to have a pitch session to talk about what it is that they've come up with.
It's that TV show Shark Tank where you come up with your business idea and then you pitch it and they go, I'll back that. Mark Cuban's puts down $1 million to back your project.
I think that would be perfect. I would like to have someone with $1 million like Mark Cuban at the end. But
Indiana University journalism graduate is going to throw that out there. That's where my alum.
Good. Well, anyway, I urge any of your listeners, if they'd like to learn about this program, go to american.edu/SOC/MAME, which is Masters in Media Entrepreneurship, and look at the incoming cohort of students who are in it. We have marketing director. We have someone who's established a site called Def TV. We have somebody who is a site optimization manager at ARP, who's also starting his own company. We have a digital strategy, the vice president of digital content strategy at USA Today. We have really marvelous people who are coming into this program. And I think what that means is that people are saying, yes, the two sides, the news side and the product side and the information side, need to know the business side.
And I had a conversation with a couple of the professors at AU about this, because my you know, we're certainly picking up our journalism skills and updating our things, but, you know, man, what is the business side of the business doing? And in the long term, I mean, that's really what's going to decide a lot of this. You know, certainly, especially with the legacy outlets, you know, how are they going to change their business model so that they can survive in the 21st century? I think that's really important, and if we can get programs like this to help, you know, the business side, I think that's you know, phenomenal.
I think that the biggest challenge for us going forward is to give people the opportunity to try things. Information is expensive. Mm-hmm. If you do something what we used to call hyperlocal, citizen-driven information, it's, if you're going to pay people, the smaller your market, right, the more expensive it is, because you need somebody to cover this community and this community and this community.
Right.
So the business models, you know, I'm so fascinated, and I love actually that the university has allowed us to move forward with this, because we have to pay people to do the journalism.
Right.
We have to figure out how to do it, or else we're just going to have rumor and inaccuracies. We need people who are professional to help share the information. They need to do that in conjunction with the public. I think it was Dan Gilmore, and I don't want to misquote him, but I think it was he who said, my readers know more than I do. The idea was that we have to partner with the public in terms of gathering information and sharing information. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's mm-hmm. a great thing. Look at the example of Wikipedia. Have you gone to Wikipedia when there's a breaking news event? You don't even think of it, right?
No.
Fascinating, spectacular, objective, slaps it up there, covers a story in a wonderful way that doesn't have any perspective or point of view, because everybody gets in there and argues all the time. Mm-hmm. No, you can't say that. You can't say that. You can't use this photo. And it's really, in some ways, what news organizations should be doing, aggregating accurate news quickly, adding to it, giving it perspective,
correcting
giving it context, correcting it, calling people to on the line if they're not accurate. And it's pretty much a good example to look at.
It's incredibly dynamic, too. I mean, that's again, one of the, we keep saying exciting, but that's one of the really exciting things about what's going on in journalism. You're not filing a story at midnight and then having it published at, you know, on somebody's stoop at 6 a.m. And then updating it 24 hours later. I mean, you're covering a story, you know, via Twitter, and then you have to post something to the website within minutes and, you know, just constantly updating, constantly changing, because news is doing that. We need to be able to react to it. We need to be able to develop those skills that allow us to do that. Well, that's pretty much it for this first endeavor. Thanks again, Amy, for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a conversation with Amy Eisman, the director of the Masters in Media Entrepreneurship and the Masters of Interactive Journalism programs at the American University in Washington, D.C. Eisman was a guest on the weekly podcast, It's All Journalism. The interview was recorded on August 18th, 2012 in Washington, D.C. You can learn more about Eisman and American University's media programs online at american.edu/SOC. You can learn more about today's guest and listen to other podcasts at itsalljournalism.com. This podcast was produced by Megan Clougherty, Jolie Lee, and Michael O'Connell. Follow us on Twitter @alljournalism or send us an email to editor@itsalljournalism.com.